Hey, yeah, just a quick one before we crack on with the episode. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like the smartest way to book flights without playing the guess the cheapest day strategy, how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use, and when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices. So travel smarter, spend less, with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get back to the show.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode, and I've got something a little different and exciting for you this week. Today I'm sharing a powerful episode from the Armchair Explorer, hosted by my good friend Aaron Miller. This episode is called Homecoming, and it tells a moving story about the Native American tribes of Eastern Oregon, specifically the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla. It uncovers a nearly forgotten chapter of history involving two chiefs and a sacred promise to bring their people home.
My favorite part of the powwow is also at the arbor at night. If you're just outside of the arbor, you can see it's like the arbor is glowing from all the lights and the dancing. And it's like, you know, when you see your family from outside a window and they're inside laughing, like having game night or something, and they're cracking up and you're like, man.
Today, we're on the eastern edge of the state, far from the bustle of coastal cities and the craggy heights of the Cascade Mountains. Here, you'll find the ancestral homeland of the Wallawa band of the Nez Perce tribe. The tribe calls itself Nimipu, or the people, and today we're going to be hearing their story from that early history and the influx of white settlers to broken treaties and eventually to exile.
The Armchair Explorer is a phenomenal travel podcast that blends immersive audio, rich storytelling, and a deep sense of human connection and adventure. I love this podcast. It's a huge inspiration to me and the podcast, and I think you'll find yourself transported by the vivid way in which these stories are told. So sit back, relax, and let this journey take you somewhere unforgettable, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Do you love spontaneous adventures, travel tips, and stories that will inspire you to pack up and go? Well, welcome to the Winging It Travel Podcast. I'm James, your host, and each week I bring you travel tales, practical advice, and interviews with travelers from around the globe. Whether you're planning a big trip or just dreaming about one, you'll find everything from hidden gems to epic fails, because travel is not perfect, and that is what makes it beautiful. So grab your backpack and let's wing it. New episodes every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts, and on YouTube too. You can find Winging It and more fantastic travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com. The link is in the show notes. Let's go and explore the world.
Welcome to the Hidden Trails of Oregon. It's been a minute, so I'm excited to be back here in the Beaver State, boots in the dirt and stories around every corner.
Are you ready for views to drop your socks?
Yeah.
The rebel base.
In our last series, we took a big picture road trip exploring the nature, culture, and adventure on offer here. This time, we're zooming in, spending more time with experts in their own space. And as before, we're bringing you into the field with us, combining full-on immersive recording with genuine conversations. Today, we're on the eastern edge of the state, far from the bustle of coastal cities and the craggy heights of the Cascade Mountains. Here, where the northeast corner of Oregon nearly merges with Washington and Idaho, rim rock bluffs fall into grassy valleys on either edge of the Wallawa River. Here, you'll find the ancestral homeland of the Wallawa band of the Nez Perce tribe. The tribe calls itself Nimipu, or the people. Nez Perce, or Pierced Nose, was a title given by French trappers referring to another tribe entirely, the Chinook. Before the arrival of Europeans, the Nez Perce were a tapestry of interconnected villages. They traded with other tribes across the entire Pacific Northwest. And today, we're going to be hearing their story from that early history and the influx of white settlers to broken treaties and eventually to exile. but we'll also be looking ahead at the legacy of two chiefs named Joseph and modern efforts to create a reunited homeland. But first off, just a quick note. We're going to be discussing sensitive topics in this episode, and there's no easy way to do that. So we've decided just to present the words as spoken by the guests themselves.
Lewis and Clark came here in 1805. They were the first people speaking English in our country, making records of our people, and trying to comprehend what we were communicating to them.
This is Bobby Connor, board member of the Nez Perce Wallawa Homeland.
So we've only had contact with European Americans for 219 years. And as I think about that, and I think about my ancestors protected by the geography and the landscape, because the narrows of the Columbia and the Great Celilo Falls prevented the explorers from coming upriver in large boats. And the South Pass was not known until about 1800 as a safe way to come into our country for the migrations of people, that the settlers who will come later, or the unsettlers, as we might think of them. And so the idea that we welcomed and took care of strangers and travelers who were pitiful 219 years ago, I mean, that's what our people thought of Lewis and Clark, is that they didn't know how to be here while we're hauling in thousands and thousands of pounds of fish and hanging it out to dry and pounding it into a lush, rich flour. They're buying dogs from us to eat. And our elders that met the expedition thought that they were kind of precarious travelers and that we should just help them so they could get home where they belonged.
This country, as you know, it's not easy to get into the Wallawa. So the Oregon Trail passed us by in the 1840s. And at that time, there was a chief, Tuicas, who was called Old Joseph.
This is Rich Wanschneider, director of the Josephi Library. We're standing at the base of Chief Joseph Mountain, just a few hundred feet from the shores of Wallawa Lake.
And then in 1854, a guy named Isaac Stevens is appointed the governor of Washington Territory and the Indian agent and the surveyor of a Northern Railroad route.
He wants to take land from the Nez Perce in order to build the Transcontinental Railway. So he calls a treaty meeting.
Old Joseph goes to it. The Nez Perce come into that treaty riding horseback, a couple thousand of them. And Stevens decides that maybe the Nez Perce get their own reservation. They're that strongest tribe in the inland Northwest. They get all of this Wallawa country, big chunk of Washington, and a lot of Idaho.
The Nez Perce had already seen decades of enormous change, and old Chief Joseph reasoned that against this seemingly inevitable onslaught of settlers, it was smarter to make a deal now in order to preserve the most important and sacred parts of their land. But the treaty wouldn't last more than a few years.
In 1860, they discover gold, and they say, oh, we need a new reservation, a new treaty. So they have a treaty meeting in 1863 in Lapway, Idaho. They shrink the reservation by 90%. And Joseph says no. And several other chiefs say no.
But it didn't matter. The settlers kept coming. Their reservation was overrun by the enterprising miners, wrote the governor of Idaho at the time. Treaty stipulations were disregarded and trampled underfoot. The new agreement would have forced Joseph's entire tribe to a small reservation in Idaho. In attempting to peacefully resist, he built a series of monuments here in defiance of the government's claims, saying, "Inside this boundary, all our people were born." And to his son, he said, "Never forget my dying words. This country holds your father's body. Never sell the bones of your father."
And old Joseph dies in 1871. The handoff is made to his son, Hinmatulatket, who became known as Young Joseph. And he has to deal with this influx of whites. Settlers keep coming in, and General Howard gives Joseph 30 days to get out and to get to that little reservation in Idaho.
The young chief tried to negotiate for time and patience, but General Howard had neither, declaring any delay an act of war. Joseph made his choice and told his people, "I said in my heart that rather than have war, I would give up my country. I would give up my father's grave. I would give up everything rather than have the blood of white men upon the hands of my people." And so in sorrow, the forced exodus of the Nez Perce from their homeland began.
He gathered up with their horses and their cows, and they crossed the Snake River in spring flood. They didn't lose a person. They lost some livestock. They got to the other side. They're at Tolo Lake in Idaho. Some young Indians from another band start taunting each other about settlers who had killed Indians, and they go and kill some settlers. And Joseph still tries to avoid war. He's going to take his people to that Lapwe Reservation. The army comes in, attacks another village who didn't want any conflict, and the Nez Perce War is on. Nez Perce War is 5 months, 1,200 miles. The Nez Perce cross and recross rivers, lead armies astray, goes through Yellowstone, which is a national park already at this time, capture tourists, and make it to 40 miles from Canada, where it's cold and it's October, it's snowing.
200 Nez Perce warriors, protecting hundreds more women and children, fought for 5 days against 520 U.S. soldiers. Joseph later wrote, "We could have escaped from Bear Paw Mountain if we had left our wounded old women and children behind. We were unwilling to do this. We had never heard of a wounded Indian recovering while in the hands of white men."
And Joseph stops and says, "From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever." Joseph was never a war chief. He was a domestic chief and a diplomat. And his people were promised a return to Idaho. That didn't happen.
Instead, the survivors were sent on unheated rail cars to a POW camp in Kansas. "Many of my people sickened and died, and we buried them in this strange land," said Joseph. "The Great Spirit Chief, who rules above, seemed to be looking some other way and did not see what was being done to my people." Joseph's surviving followers spent the next 7 years in what would later become Oklahoma. He headed east to lobby for their cause.
So he learns the telegraph and he immediately starts using it. He goes to Washington, D.C., makes a famous speech at Lincoln Hall, meets President Hayes, tries to make the argument that he could come back to the West. People are dying. 60 people died in the first 3 weeks they were in what they call still the hot country.
Joseph's message spread, and he became something of a hero across the East. Eventually, his tribe was able to travel west again, but not to Oregon. Half of the exiled tribe was sent to Washington and half to Idaho, but Chief Joseph never gave up on his homeland.
Joseph made 2 trips back to the Wallawas with money in his pocket to buy some land. There was still great fear of Indians and a pan-Indian uprising. By 1900, when Joseph makes his last trip to the Wallawas, the local newspaper says, and the locals made sport of the old chief. Petitions were signed saying we don't want any lazy Indians here. And Joseph goes back and the doctor says in 1904 that in Nez Pelham he dies of a broken heart.
Chief Joseph spent decades advocating for his people's reunification and return to their homeland. But he would be buried in a strange land, not of his ancestors. The 19th century activist Helen Hunt Jackson wrote, "Joseph has never made a treaty with the United States and has never surrendered to the government the lands he claimed to own. These Indians were encroached upon by white settlers, and when these encroachments became intolerable, they were compelled to take up arms." As he swore to his father, Joseph never gave away this land. And just up the trail, you can find proof of another promise kept.
So you can notice from here, note the monument, note everybody feels like they've got to leave something here for the old chief.
And there's a lot of offerings been left there too, you know, coins and pens and painted rocks.
We're at the final resting place of old Chief Joseph. A stark, snowy peak named for his son keeps watch above the monument, the ribbon of Wallawa Lake stretching south into the horizon. This country holds your father's body, he told his son, and there it stays, where visitors come from all over the world to pay their respects.
And you'll see people, when they hear how the Nez Perce were hounded out of here, they shake their heads and they said, how could we do that to the Nez Perce? How could we do that? It's easy to tear up just thinking about it, you know? But people have, over the years, talked about reburying young Joseph here. And there have been movements in that direction. And the people up at Nez Pelham on the Colville Reservation said they didn't want him alive. They can't have him dead. So he has not moved down here. Okay. And so that's a kind of a poignant aspect of that. And people go to his grave at Nez Pelham in Washington to pay reverence to.
Thank you so much. The story
is not all happy endings, right?
But the story is not all over either.
And the story is not all over. You're right.
Thanks, Rich.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you so much.
In Nez Perce culture, loss of homeland is loss of self, and descendants continue to be affected by the injustices of the past. But they've never forgotten their home. Due to social, logistical, and financial barriers, few have been able to return to the valley. But in 1989, an effort began with one person to heal these wounds and reintroduce the first people back to the landscape.
Taz came here 30-some years ago, and he had the dream to invite the Nez Perce back to their homeland.
We're sitting with Nancy Crenshaw, and she's referring to Earl Taz Connor, a descendant of Old Chief Joseph.
He didn't grow up here because none of his generation did. He was in the Navy. He was very proud of his service to the country and had a huge sense of humor, and he loved to tease. He had diabetes. They told him he wasn't going to live very long, and he went through a red light, and so he didn't even bother to go to court or do anything. And so then he made a revival, and he said, you know, so then he had to go back and get his license from the court.
Dang it, I have to pay that speeding ticket now.
Yeah. And he just, you know, he was a very special person, and he was the driver of this original project here. And I remember when he first started, you know, saying, oh yeah, we're going to have an interpretive center, we're going to have a junior college here, and we're going to have, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, yeah, well, that's a big dream, you know, and I just didn't believe it myself. And he said, you know, to develop this, let's have a powwow. That's where it started.
What was that first powwow like, getting ready for it?
It was at the high school. And I can just remember, you know, we thought, well, are any Indians going to even come? Mm-hmm. But no, they came. Carload would come and another carload. And and that was our first year. And it just came together in a beautiful way, I thought. And the music bounces off, you know, the drums echo off the mountain. And you can feel them, you know, you can feel them. Just the people coming home. And to me, it's very joyful. I mean, quite often it just brings tears to my eyes almost every year.
Yeah. By 1998, the celebration had grown to the point that the group could reclaim 320 acres along the Wallawa River, a place for feet to touch the earth, for language to be spoken, songs to be sung, and for fragmented communities to come home. The event was named after the location, Timkalix, from where you can see the mountains.
There's a trail that you can walk up over the top. It's very quiet. I really like to be there by myself sometimes because I just feel the power, and often there's hawks that fly over. Are you familiar with the sound that a hawk makes? It's kind of that whistle. And I always think maybe that's Taz or Terry and my husband down there, you know, flying over. And I love it when our friends come every year for the powwow, or if I see Native people camping down there. That's what it's meant to be.
At one powwow, Taz said, "It is time once again to let the land hear the familiar sounds in the land of winding waters. The rhythm of the drumbeat, the songs, the language, the prayers, the people, and all creation joined to coexist and respect Mother Earth. It has fallen upon the shoulders of this generation to capture the history of this land that we live in."
It's weird when you grow up and you become this person to share knowledge, when I still feel like I'm the kid. I'm still the student.
This is Community Engagement Director JC Sohappy.
I was a nosy little kid that liked to ask lots of questions. And so this job and me just happened to meet up at the same right time. And I got to pour all of my love into making sure that other people like me can build a bond with people in Wallawa, and how to get more kids there and to get elders there that haven't been there in a long time. Because it fills your cup when you're there. It's like a welcome home. My favorite part of the powwow is also at the arbor at night. If you're just outside of the arbor, you can see it's like the arbor is glowing from all the lights and the dancing. And it's like, you know, when you see your family from outside a window and they're inside laughing, like having game night or something, and they're cracking up, and you're like, man, what a beautiful family, you know, and you get to see your family from the outside looking in. That's what it's like on the outside of the arbor. And then you can hear the bells from their outfits and the drumming and the drumsticks, and like you can hear the pounding. It like hits the mountain and then it like bounces back. And it's like you can feel it at night. It just feels like not real. I used to think that when I was little, so every time at the powwow for the past 30 years, I always take a step out and stand there for a few minutes. And you get to stand in the same spot that these strong ancestors that fought for your existence stood. You know, people fought for my people not to be here. And they fought to keep my grandparents quiet, and I don't have to be quiet anymore. I'm here to continue fighting their fight and make sure that I'm fighting for love. I'm fighting for the love of the land, not to say that this is mine. This is all of ours, and we can love it together, but I need you to love it correctly. I need you to know that the land is trying to show you things that it's not well, and how can we pour our love in it, into it, to make it be better? So it's yearning for us to talk to it, because I think that people forget that it's alive too, that it's its own entity, and that we can respect it. We went on a Snake River trip with middle schoolers, and we took this hike, and then we got to this top of the hike, and you can see way down the river this way and this way. Yell out your Indian name if you have an Indian name, or if you have, you can yell out your name and you tell this place who you are so they can, it will remember you. And so we're out there war whooping around and yelling our Indian names and telling it who we are, so that when our kids come back and they share our Indian name, that they'll be like, oh, this is their family, they were here before. So it's really cool that I get to be part of the story to instill that into other people, or to open their eyes in a different way and see the way that I see, because I didn't know that people didn't see the way that I seen. If we listen with other things than our ears, then we can hear the signs from the Creator and the people that passed on behind us, and they'll show you where to go. But you have to listen in a different way.
So we've just made it to the top of the hills that overlook the Nez Perce homeland here. And it's an amazing moment, actually, because we just startled a hawk. And who knows, maybe that was Taz looking over us. And we're not that remote up here. I can look down at the town of Wallawa and everyone's waking up. You can see the lights turning on and the tractors in the distance beginning to rumble. But it feels remote. It feels completely different here. JC told us that when we get to this homeland, what we should do is we should close our eyes and just listen, just see if we can feel something. And so that's what I'm going to do now. I'm going to close my eyes. I'm going to turn off all my other senses and let's just listen to the sounds of this homeland.
When you learn the stories of a place, for me as a visitor, it always changes the way I see it. It's like those stories become woven into the landscape somehow, bringing out new contours and colors I hadn't noticed before. And what I felt as I stood there listening to the sounds of nature was a realization that the silence I was listening to wasn't empty. It was full of hope. Chief Joseph once said, "Let me be a free man, free to travel, free to stop, free to work, free to trade where I choose, free to choose my own teachers, free to follow the religion of my fathers, free to think and talk and act for myself, and I will obey every law. Whenever the white man treats an Indian as they treat each other, then we will have no more wars. We shall all be alike, brothers of one father and one mother, with one sky above us and one country around us, that all people maybe one people." The chief never saw his dream come to fruition, and there is much work still to be done. But at least here in Timkalix, from where you can see the mountains, his descendants are finally beginning to come home. Thanks for joining me in the Nez Perce homeland. And remember, you can visit that exact powwow this year and see it for yourself. Just go to wallawanezperce.org to find out more. And you can actually stay on site as well. They have a historic house. There's hiking trails, lots of things to see and do. So highly recommend that. And if you'd like to take these hidden trails yourself, you can find out how to do that by going to traveloregon.com. There's lots of great info up there about this trip and everything else you need to know to plan that next Oregon adventure. So thank you to all the guests who featured on today's show. Rich Wanschneider, Bobby Connor, JC So Happy, and Nancy Crenshaw. And we are not leaving Eastern Oregon for our next few episodes, so buckle up, and I mean that literally, hit that subscribe button and follow us wherever you get your shows. You're not going to want to miss any of this. This series was produced by Armchair Productions, the audio experts for the travel industry. Find out more at armchair-productions.com. Brian Thacker led our pre-production, Charles Tyree assisted on audio editing, and the episode was recorded by Jason Patton, who also wrote and co-produced it, along with me, your host, Aaron Miller. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the podcast episode today. If you've been inspired by today's chat and want to book some travel, if you head to the show notes, you'll see some affiliate links below which help support this podcast. You'll find Skyscanner to book your flight. You'll find booking.com to book that accommodation. Want to stay in a super cool hostel? You'll see Hostelworld down there too. You'll find Revolut to get your travel card sorted. Click the GigSky link to get your eSIM ready for your trip. And more importantly, you'll find Safety Wing Insurance to get that travel insurance for your trip. There are many more to check out, so when you click that link and book your product, a small commission goes towards me and the Wiggin' It Travel podcast. Thank you in advance and enjoy your travels. Hey, yeah, just a quick one before we crack on with the episode. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like the smartest way to book flights, without playing the guess the cheapest day strategy, how to avoid paying for upgrades that you won't use, and when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices. So travel smarter, spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get back to the show.